Friday. Today is April the 5th, and you're listening to My Farm. Well, honeybees making the news, but not so much the bees as it is a pest of those bees, the yellow-legged hornet, an invasive species we're going to talk about. Fortunately, it's not in Ohio yet, but where it has been found, it definitely has a negative impact on bee populations. We'll have all the details after this message from our sponsor.
Sponsored by Seed Consultants, simply the best value in the seed industry. Learn more at seedconsultants.com.
We're going to take some time this Friday morning as we look out in the backyard and garden and start off talking about hornets, actually hornets and bees, as the yellow-legged hornet is something that is on the move and it negatively impacts bees. The yellow-legged hornet is native to the tropical and subtropical areas of Southeast Asia, but the wasp was first reported in Georgia, actually, in the Savannah area, by a beekeeper. On August 9, 2023, APHIS confirmed it as the yellow-legged hornet and later found several nests of yellow-legged hornets in the area. They were able to successfully eradicate them, and this was the first report of a yellow-legged hornet in the United States. Now, it's a social wasp species that constructs large paper nests above ground, particularly in trees and man-made structures like eaves on roofs. And as the colonies grow, the nests can house up to 5,000 to 6,000 of those worker hornets. Now, at a quick glance, hornets and yellow jackets can look similar in size. The yellow-legged hornet, though, when we do it in comparison, is actually going to be slightly bigger maybe than your typical eastern yellow jacket or a northern paper wasp, probably a little more common to what a European hornet would be in size, but smaller than some of the others, obviously smaller than those cicada killer wasps that we talk about, smaller than the northern giant hornets and the western cicada killers. So from that standpoint, the yellow-legged hornet's about 2.5 centimeters long, smaller, as we said, than the European hornet. Their queens are about 30 millimeters. Male workers are about 24 to 20 millimeters, a little smaller, respectively. Distinct characteristics, though, that separate them from other hornets are the yellow tarsi. Looking down from above, the head capsule would be black, but it can be yellow in different species. There are 10 actual subspecies that have been identified worldwide, and while the different subspecies are out there and may be more invasive in Europe, the subspecies reported in the U.S. are not known at this point in time. Now, when it comes to where else they've been found, the yellow-legged hornet was first reported in France back in 2004, and it has now been established in other parts of Europe. The first record of this hornet as far north as Ireland was back in 2021. Most interestingly, in the molecular analysis, the gene, the entire range of yellow-legged hornets in Europe converged to a single mated queen arriving from China sometime 50 to 20 years ago. It's interesting they can pull all that together. That has expanded since it was first recorded. The data shows the potential for the exotic insect to establish and spread with very few or even single individuals. And as the first report here in the U.S. in Georgia in August of 23, the yellow-legged hornet was reported in Jasper County, South Carolina in November of 23. So far, this species has been reported only in these two U.S. states. And although several authors indicate it's unlikely the yellow-legged hornet will be established in the U.S., it is important to be vigilant as we are expecting warmer weather patterns. Now, what is the ecological and economic impact? That's probably a bigger question. The problem is yellow-legged hornets feed on honeybees as well as other insects. So during the summer, yellow-legged hornet will hunt foraging honeybee adults and invade those honeybee colonies to steal the larvae. This is a real threat to obviously local bee populations and to beekeepers. Some research indicates that approximately 30% of the honeybee hives in Europe are being attacked and actually weakened by this pest. So when a fertilized queen emerges after surviving the winter, that queen feeds on sap, develops her ovaries to look for a suitable nesting site in the spring. In Ireland, it was found that 99% of queens don't actually survive the winter, but often one queen is enough to start that population growing. And once the queen selects a suitable site, she alone is responsible for building that, quote, primary nest close to the ground, foraging for resources, laying eggs, that's usually sometime in April, and caring for the young. Emerging workers then from the primary nest, if you will, usually it's females that will emerge in June and assume the duties outside the nest, including building sort of that secondary nest. Typically, that's an oval found up in a tree or building, and feeding young in the spring. The brood is then fed with various kinds of insects and spiders that provide them protein. When the temperatures start to peak in early summer and the fall. That's when the colonies will begin producing males and next year's queen. That's when the workers attack honeybee hives, killing all the adult bees to obtain the food and higher protein content for the developing reproductive cast. So in Ohio, nothing to be alarmed about at the immediate time, but something obviously to be on the lookout for. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more after this message from our sponsor.
Williamson Crop Insurance, home of Decision Max. Decision Max allows you a simple solution to analyze your operation and make informed marketing and crop insurance decisions to mitigate your risks. Manage your whole operation in one place with the ability to blend counties, marketing, and insurance coverage to give a complete overview of your operation. Williamson Crop Insurance, protecting the Eastern Corn Belt since 1980. Learn more at cropcoverage.com.
Thanks, Joe. We're going to change directions now and talk about bees, as we find that wild bee populations are being stressed, but progress seems to be made on providing good habitats. USDA's Gary Crawford tells us more.
If this wild bumblebee that I recorded on my front porch here could speak to us, it might be saying,
we need a habitat, we need to be protected, they need nutrition all through the year. We need lots and lots of different kinds of flowers. Lots of different pollinators need different ones.
And it might also tell us that we need it. This according to Dr. Cass Urban-Mead. She's an expert with the Xerces Society for Invertebrate Conservation. And a while back, I had a chance to talk with her in Washington out at the Agriculture Department's People's Garden. She says our food supply depends on plant pollination, which is done by bees and many other insects.
At least one in three of our bites of food relies on pollinators to some degree, and that's particularly true once you zoom in on your most nutritious and nutrient-dense foods, the nuts and fruits and vegetables, and then lots of other important crops and wild plants are highly dependent on pollinators.
And she says it's not just honeybees that do this work. In fact,
we actually have over 4,000 species of wild native bees who are not honeybees living. Many of them are solitary. Some of them are shiny and green or blue or your carpenter bee, your bumblebee, all of these beloved native pollinators.
But as you've probably heard, conditions may not be the greatest for some of these bees and other pollinators.
There's multiple stressors that are making life more difficult for a lot of our pollinators.
She says a changing climate isn't helping any, but the overall problem is basically the loss of natural habitat, as more wild space is being lost to development, and in many cases, the wrong kind of development.
Making things monoculture lawns, spraying everything with insecticides maybe prophylactically rather than carefully as a response to a specific problem.
However, as much as we've talked about this here and the problems, Cass says no matter what you've heard,
there's absolutely progress being made.
As more people become aware of the problem.
It's exciting to see more insects being considered in endangered species and protection laws. It's also just exciting to see how much the public and so many more people are really caring and asking for pollinator habitat to be included in a new park design, in their schools, in their towns.
And in their own home lawns and gardens.
There's no space that's too small. You can make a difference no matter how small your space is. It's not, you know, a polar bear or a great wolf that needs huge numbers of acres, no matter whether you just have a small patio, a balcony, a patch of grass nearby, you can convert it into habitat and start to make that difference.
And next time, we're going to find out exactly what we homeowners or property owners can do to help out my friend here on my front porch. This is Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Thanks, Gary. That's what's making agricultural news on my farm. For my 102.7 WMYW, I'm Dusty Sonnenberg. You have a great day.